And welcome to another episode of GT Radio with myself, Tino Magnetta. Tonight I have a very special guest, younger guy than we usually have on the show at the beginning of his career, Jess Martinelli from the D. How are you, Jess?
I'm great, Tino. Really appreciate you having me on the show and love listening to it. It's going to be a fun opportunity.
Thanks. Thanks for supporting the show, and I'm glad we have you on. You got a lot of interesting stuff. Let's start right from the beginnings. Tell us, you know, where you're from, what kind of upbringing you had, and what were your aspirations when you were growing up?
So I'm originally from Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Lived there my entire life, same house. I had a great upbringing, really supportive parents, very successful themselves. I guess I'll just start with them. My mom was a corporate lawyer for AT&T for 25 years, and then she actually moved into the gaming industry. Funny enough, she switched over to the gaming industry 2 years after I had already been working out here in Las Vegas. I'd love to talk about that a little bit more. My dad was a Detroit police officer for about 9 years. Then he became a lawyer, probate attorney. It's an interesting combination to be raised by two lawyers, and I learned a lot from them. But I went to Grosse Pointe South High School and played hockey for 13 years, all the way up until I was the captain of the varsity hockey team out there. Really love hockey, favorite sport. I also played, you know, baseball and a little bit of lacrosse for a couple of years too. Made my way to Michigan State University, which was not a surprise to really anyone, I'd say. I was raised by a family of Spartans. That includes my dad, three of his brothers, and pretty much, you know, everybody I grew up with, their friends, Spartans as well. And 3 years before me, my sister as well. So
Let me ask you something. How did the fact that you're from Michigan and from that Midwest kind of mentality, how do you think that shaped your character as opposed to have grown up, you know, in the big city or, you know, the West Coast? How are people back there? I mean, you're a very, very cool guy, you know, down to earth. How are the people back there?
A lot of people say the same thing about their city, probably. Grosse Pointe was a bubble. And we were, you know, 15 minutes outside of downtown Detroit, which was interesting growing up that close to Detroit at that time. A lot of people, their vision of Detroit is broken downtown that, you know, had a lot of crime and all that stuff. And it was absolutely true. When I was growing up, we'd go to Red Wings games down there and always kind of had our guard up and head on a swivel every single time we parked our car and walked to the arena. And then you drive 15 minutes back to Grosse Pointe and you've got this very, classic Midwestern town where everybody knows each other, not necessarily that everyone's in each other's business, but it's small enough where families know each other and they've known each other for a long time. The whole Midwestern values thing, we never left our door unlocked. I know that's like a thing that people say in the Midwest, but it was safe enough that kind of saying applies. It was a great town to grow up in. We had phenomenal education system, and I'm very thankful for that because it had a huge part, played a huge part in my life. I was lucky all the way from middle school. I had a series of really great English teachers. I remember specific teachers in eighth grade and a specific teacher I had in high school. I had him when I was a sophomore, and then I had him again when I was a senior. And the things that I learned about writing at that age, it really sculpted the next years of my life, it played a huge role at Michigan State. And it of course, has a huge gives me a huge advantage in the business world today. So, you know, very, very grateful for that. And, of course, two parents who are both lawyers, and my father is a writer as well for Police Chief Magazine, and he's written in a number of different ways as well. I was just surrounded by this great writing environment, and it, you know, that translates to communication. And those are things that have just really, really helped me get where I am today. And I hope to sharpen those skills for the rest of my life.
Did you have any aspirations as you grew up about what you wanted to do? Did you think you were going to be like a lawyer, or what were the things that you thought you were going to do?
No, actually. So my father said he'd write me out of the will, funny enough, if I tried to become a lawyer or a police officer. Didn't want me to follow in his footsteps. And, you know, but he reminded me and my sister not to become lawyers, that we, you know, it was a joke, be written out of the will. But, you know, that's his way of saying, that's, you know, I want you to follow your dreams and your heart. But that one's off the table. Just trust me right now. And we did. So, you know, aspirations, I, you know, like a lot of kids, I was jumping from one thing to another every 6 months, you know, let's say eighth grade through high school. I remember in eighth grade, I did a project on Italian culture. I'm from a very Italian family. And at that time I wanted to own my own vineyard and you know, that was a dream back then. And then throughout high school, I started to learn how to cook with my mom and really started to enjoy it and appreciate it. And I definitely started towards the end of high school to really find passion in cooking and understanding how creative of an art it is. And, you know, because I was artistic, but I couldn't paint, couldn't draw for anything. It's tough enough for me to color inside the lines at Applebee's these days. But, you know, I understood what it was like to feel that feeling of creation when I was cooking. And, you know, there's not a lot of high school boys who are cooking with their moms and then, you know, going to hockey practice and, you know, not, you know, beating the crap out of somebody, but hitting people hard and then going back home and eating that shrimp dish that we cooked a couple hours ago. Like, that's, you know, that was kind of a regular thing in my house. So I knew I liked the culinary arts at a young age. And my first job in high school was actually as a fry cook. I worked for National Coney Island, which for, you know, Michigan people is one of our go-tos. There's a lot of different Coneys. Of course, we've got the American Coney Island down at the D Las Vegas. That one's in the heart of Detroit. And then they have a competitor right next to them as well. So, you know, we've got a lot of, not like New York's Coney Island, but we've got our own history of the chili dog and the onions. And that's my first job was our term for it was flinging Coneys. So, you know, I was just a low-level fry cook, and I just loved something about the, you know, customer service side of it. Of course, you got angry guests when you're 15 years old, and you got angry guests today. It's just something that I learned to you know, deal with at a young age. And but really, I loved the chaos of the kitchen. It, you know, it was hot in there. Of course, it smelled like chili and cheese and all that stuff. But I loved the camaraderie in there. And you know, you're a really tight knit team when you're working in the kitchen, and especially the one we were in. It wasn't very big. So, you know, that was my first experience in the service industry. And it really only grew from there. I worked a couple summers at the Arts, Beats, and Eats Festival in Royal Oak, Michigan. My first job in college, I was working at a banquet center as a banquet server. So, you know, that it worked all the way up. You know, I felt like I belonged in food and beverage.
So what was it about cooking that you, I mean, you said, you know, you played hockey and we know there's fighting in hockey, but cooking is the other end, right? It's you usually do it alone or with one other person or two other people. There's no fighting involved sometimes, but maybe yelling and screaming. What is it that you like about cooking that it kind of like complements everything else you do?
I think honestly, it's just creation. It's pure creation. You got to do it quickly and you know, you follow a recipe or you're cooking, literally just making something up, trying new things. Whether you're, like you said, whether you're with someone or not, it's that feeling of creation and it's quick. It's a quick, redemption or payback. You get an order and 5 minutes later, boom, it's made, you made it. And you're, you know, touching someone's life for 5 seconds while they're eating that coney or, you know, it's, you know, the service industry at its best in terms of creation. So I think that's what I enjoyed about it, especially at that young age too. It was, I was eager to impress, even though it was a fry cook position, I was eager to impress from day one. I just wanted to be a part of something.
That's the key, right? No matter what kind of job you have, you have to be passionate about it. Like you said, I was a fry cook, but I loved it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciated the income too, you know?
Of course, that never hurts. Tell me a little bit about what exactly, you know, when you started doing this fry cook thing and customer service on that level and interacting with people, what did you learn? What was the foundation there? What were the principles that you learned?
I mean, you know, this is something I experience all the time these days too. Making mistakes, forgetting that this person ordered something. You know, whether you're in the best state of mind at work that day or you're just not as sharp as usual, you make mistakes and, you know, you feel, if you care, you feel like it's kind of the end of the world, even for just a millisecond. But, you know, you might get yelled at by the guest or the customer. A lot of times you don't. Sometimes they go, it's okay, don't worry. You know, I forgot your fries. I forgot, you know, I forgot your soda. Don't worry about it. It's a little thing. So, you know, that was the first experience with making mistakes. And it, you know, still is something that I deal with occasionally when I'm, you know, just a little mistake. Oh no, well, it's going to be all right because we're going to figure it out, try to do the right thing, and people make mistakes. So that's definitely a lesson I remember. Communication, you know, early on when I started out, things were a little lax in the kitchen and as I worked there over the year, things got tightened up, new management kind of thing, and you start listening to new people and taking directions from new people, and you got to help them do their job too. So, you know, I think managing up is what we say, but without, you know, understanding these nuances and these terms back then.
Now, you told me that your dad was really into writing and you got that bug too, but also into storytelling. Tell us a little bit about that and how that's helped you in your professional career.
So I do come from a writing family, and I remember both my mom and dad saying when I was pretty young, probably before middle school, how important writing is. And they knew back then that a lot of people in the world don't know how to write, and when they don't, it is a very tangible barrier that will hold them back from whatever their goal is. Because if you can't communicate in that way, it's a harder road. But yeah, I know my dad would edit my stuff, and he would edit my sister's stuff, and I recall him like editing her English papers when I was still in middle school. He'd be editing her English papers when she was in high school, and I remember that being a big deal back then. You know, that, and then there's legal pads. You got two lawyers in the house. There's legal pads, you know, all over the house with pages and pages of writing. You know, in any way, whether it's a direct lesson or editing session or just, you know, me seeing stacks of writing all over the house, it was in my face in a good way. I had a little bit of experience on the school newspaper in high school, and that was kind of just because my sister had done it too, and you know, I knew I could be good at it, and she was really good at it, but I just kind of wanted to, you know, follow in her footsteps a little too back then. And she went on to Michigan State and got an arts and humanities degree, and eventually made her way to Northwestern for journalism school. And she's actually working for USA Today, writing for their sports website. So, you know, she is a writer at heart and very good at what she does. So, you know, this whole math, of course, and sciences were important in our family, but it was obvious that I was meant to be a writer, and I knew that from a young age. And you know, I loved it. I embraced it. And it showed. You know, I got the best grades in English. I can't say that for the other subjects. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to be good at everything, but if you have a passion for stuff, it's good. How did your siblings, what kind of effect did your siblings have on you? Because you're the youngest, right?
Yeah, it's just me and my sister. Honestly, we had 3 years apart. She's 3 years older than me, and we were both very, very independent kids. So, you know, she would spend hours after school at swim practice and then school newspaper. I'd spend hours after school at either hockey or baseball or, you know, out with my friends. And we were just really independent kids. And we both had big circles of friends and didn't play any similar sports, but we did, I'd say we did a great job of finding our own identities. So I think that's had a big impact on me too. And my core group of friends that I grew up with, I was very lucky to have, you know, four friends all the way from kindergarten until high school before we all went our separate ways for college. I was very lucky to have that group. Couldn't say the same for a lot of people in my city. And each of us had our own independent, you know, goals and hobbies. So, you know, I played hockey, and my four best friends, none of them played hockey with me. They were, you know, one of them played basketball. One of them was very good at guitar. The other one is great at drums. And like we each had our own independent lives, but we also, you know, were kind of brothers too. So, you know, I'd say that they were just as close as siblings to me, and that independence really taught me how to deal with different groups of people, different groups of friends, different walks of life. And it was the same practice every year growing up.
Very cool. Tell us a little bit about the job at the D and how that all came about.
So, the D Las Vegas, which is also, you know, the Golden Gate Casino, both downtown casinos, the D, they recruit from a lot more colleges these days, but when I was graduating in December of 2015, they recruited from Michigan State university exclusively. And that has a lot to do with the fact that our owner, Derek Stevens, is from Michigan, and along with his wife and his daughter, they're all from Michigan. A lot of people in our company are from Michigan. We've got a nice Midwestern base, and he likes the owner likes to recruit from Michigan State University, and that has to do with the fact that he likes the kids that come out of there, and it also has to do with the fact that Michigan State has unbelievable hospitality business program, number two in the country, second to Cornell, and the guys who recruited me. One of them is actually from Michigan State University. He graduated, I think, 4 years before me. His name's Michael Bender. He was the guy who started the management program at the D the year that I was graduating. So he went to Michigan State with a specific person in mind to kick off this management program. We crossed paths and I was lucky enough to make my way out to Las Vegas. But the reason I was interested in casinos, honestly, I got into the hospitality business program as a sophomore, and I knew it was a great program, and I knew my food and beverage background could play a huge role in that. I was a banquet server at the hotel on campus at the time. Everybody in my program, and it was a big, a lot of kids in hospitality business at MSU. And everybody I talked to seemed to have an interest in the front desk or some side of hotel operations. And if not that, they were going to food and beverage. And, I was really enjoying my job at the banquet hall, and I loved the camaraderie in there too, being a server and prepping in the kitchen. But I felt like everybody was kind of doing the same thing and had the same goal. I'm going to start out at the front desk, and then a couple of years I'll be a front desk manager. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's what so many people are great at. That's how so many people in our industry get their start. And it wasn't speaking to me. And while I did love food and beverage, I was having trouble visualizing a path in it back then. I think I was afraid that if I moved up any higher at the banquet hall or in food and beverage altogether, I wouldn't enjoy it as much as just being a server and having fun. Then there was this class, the Casino 101 at Michigan State, and I took that, and then I was lucky enough to visit Las Vegas for the first time when I was 21 with a family who was basically my family as well, just some very close family friends, and that was my first experience in Las Vegas. So I just realized, there's only two casino classes at MSU. Everybody else is going to, hotels or food and beverage. Maybe I should try and do what nobody else is doing. And of course I was in law. I got to stay at the Venetian out here in a suite. That was my first experience. So, of course the whole lavish side of Las Vegas and nice dinners and all that stuff. And I thought that, that sounds pretty fun. It sounds different. Nobody in my other hospitality business classes are talking about the operations of a casino. I just didn't, there's this whole world that I didn't know and I wanted to know about. So that's kind of what led me to casinos. And then the hospitality business career fair at Michigan State, it's phenomenal. And that was December 2015 or November 2015 is when they interviewed me and had a great time in the interview, and they just kept saying, look, this guy's from Michigan, this is his vision, this is what we're looking for out at the D, and it kind of lined up, and that's how I got out to the D Las Vegas.
Now, when you first started, you came to Vegas, big city. You know, what were your feelings when you first started this job? I mean, it was a completely different world, right? Give us a little bit of an idea of how you felt.
Well, it was the same feeling that I described to people when they come here and visit me, or they ask how Las Vegas is, even today. It was overstimulating, you know, and that's what we do here. Just, you know, the bright lights. And I came out here for the first time with my dad. He met everybody down at the D, and they treated us to a unbelievable first couple days. Just, you know, everybody so welcoming instantly, from the owner down to, you know, the executives and everybody in between. Right out of the gate, you know, you felt like this family was welcoming you in with, you know, like a group hug kind of, which I don't know. I can't say for sure if it's been that way for other kids who come from Michigan or from my exact situation to a different casino in Las Vegas. So very welcoming right away. And they made it clear to me early on that, you know, this management program is for you. This is, you know, we want you to, you know, understand as much about this industry and as much about this company as possible over the first 6 months. And we want you to be open about what interests you. So that was made clear to me right away. And, you know, I jumped into work right away. I wasn't going out all the time. Really like just staying at the casinos till 3 or 4 in the morning right away. I was just trying to figure out how to be professional, and that's all I could handle back then. And I'm sure I was overthinking it, but I guess I'm glad that I did. So that was my first impression of the city. Is I've got a new little family here, new corporate family, and I'm very lucky for that.
Yeah, that's very cool that you had that feeling, and especially because you kind of, like we say in Italy, you know, you had your paisan, the Michiganders, right?
That's right.
So as you evolved and started to learn more about the business, what were some of the things that you found the most difficult to absorb?
I started out in, I went through my 6 month rotation and dove right into database analytics, became a marketing analyst at the company. I learned, and I was so lucky to have all this experience at the D at like my first 2 years. I was able to wear many hats right away. Because of the management program, but even afterwards, you know, as a marketing analyst in this industry, it's kind of normal to work slot tournaments and assist with that. But we're a smaller company, so I was assisting with slot tournaments for the beginning of, you know, being a marketing analyst, but then, like, you know, some staff changes, I ended up kind of running the slot tournament software. It kind of fell in my lap, and they needed someone to do it. So, you know, I'm a marketing analyst for 8 hours a day, and then, 3 hours a couple times a month, I'm operating slot tournament software that I kind of had to learn and teach myself. So right away got a couple roles and had to learn kind of trial by combat. And those pressure situations were great, because I, you know, once again, I knew there was a ton on the line, and if I made a mistake, I was going to just really beat myself up about it and feel terrible about it. But sure enough, I made plenty of mistakes, and the software would crash, and I'd have to, you know, apologize to 80 guests and, hey, we're figuring it out, blah, blah, blah. Occasionally I'd have to get on the microphone. And this is like less than a year in to being in Las Vegas. And I'd be covered in sweat and trying to figure out all this stuff at the same time. And then, you know, slot tournament ends and boom, I got to go right back up to my desk and start working on those direct mailers. And so, you know, stuff like that. And then I got involved in keeping lists for ticketing for all of our events, center events, and eventually got into stuff related to VIP ticketing for T-Mobile Arena and, you know, accommodating as many of our players as I could and figuring out, you know, who deserves to go and balancing all that stuff at the same time. And then, you know, back to the direct mail stuff. So this was happening all very quickly, and I was very lucky to have the boss that I have who gave me this freedom to wear a lot of hats. And even after my management trainee program ended, it still felt like, and it kind of still does today, feels like I'm rotating a little bit, because that's exactly what I've been doing. I've been lucky enough to take on a couple roles at the same time, despite what the title on my business card says. And I'm so grateful for that, because I don't know if a lot of other people my age with my experience have had that luxury.
Yeah, and the thing is, because of your, you know, fearlessness and willing to learn, you're learning a lot of different aspects about the business.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's
getting
when you stop learning, it's, you know, you're doing something wrong. And I've that advice has been passed on to me by so many great people in the industry and so many great people at the D. If you're not learning, you're not growing, and then you really, you might say you have goals, but you're not going to, you know, you're not going to reach them. So,
yep.
Learning new roles and new responsibilities and, you know, just trying to cover as much ground as possible while not sacrificing any quality, it's been huge for me.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Tell us a little bit about what you think of the state of our business right now. Where are we at? I know you guys are doing a lot of exciting stuff at the D with the new building and, you know, basically building something that hasn't been any construction going on there in decades. But where are we at in our business?
You know, it's an exciting time, of course. That's what people say, right? It is though. You got sports betting taking over the country. It's in our headlines, in our gaming reports every day, and that's a new challenge, and people are concerned and happy with where we're going about that. And I think I'm of course going to say what I have to say as being an employee of downtown Las Vegas and being a proud patron of downtown Las Vegas. Everything is more fun downtown to us. And of course there's things that are on the strip these days that, you'll only ever find on the strip, and everybody needs to experience that too. And it's still fun, of course, but people are looking for, value these days. And, you know, I'm surrounded by people who, no matter where we're going for lunch, this, you know, a new place we're going for lunch, first thing after we've decided where we're going, we got to look it up and see what the reviews are. You know, everybody has lots of access to reviews and information these days. And it's so quick and so instant that, things are held to a higher degree these days of satisfaction. And, people want a lot more value. So, I think that's what we've learned to provide downtown is good value for money. And there's unforgettable experiences in Vegas overall, but I think it's a lot more fun downtown. As far as the, you know, gaming across the whole country goes, yeah, I'm doing my best right now to learn about as many casinos as possible. And that's just part of my role these days as the affiliate marketing goes, and it's been exciting. You get to learn about casinos and their different programs and their incentives all across the country. And we're all very different. And I think a lot of people living in Las Vegas, they forget how different casinos are in different parts of the country. And there's a lot we could learn from everybody out there that might not be applicable to Las Vegas, but it's the fun of continuing to learn.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Should we take some phone calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Great, great stuff so far. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jess?
Good evening, gentlemen. Steve Neely, how are you doing?
Very good.
How are you,
Steve? How are
you? Doing well. Great job tonight, Jess. Really enjoying listening to your interview. And as always, Tino, doing a great job.
Thanks, buddy.
So, appreciate that.
So you talked a lot about your experience in Michigan State, and it sounds like not only a great program to get to some fundamental stuff, but also a great pipeline for Derek and his team to recruit from. So nice setup there. But if you had to go back to what you learned in school and then entering into the business world, specifically the casino world, what's one or two lessons that you wish they would have taught you at school to assist you with that transition?
I think I would have framed and just generally talked about player development more. I didn't understand what player development was at all. And Michigan State hospitality business only had two casino classes.
Right.
niche. And I would have framed player development differently. I would have tried to, start off a class by showing, all the lavishness and the luxury of what player development is, what casino hosts do, and how people in a casino take care of their players or incentivize their players on a much higher level. I would have started out with the bang and the boom and the flashing lights, and look, this week get your front row seats at the boxing match, and then you get to go up to your beautiful suite that has two floors and a spiral staircase and marble everywhere. This is what it's like. And then just to grab students' attention, students like me who weren't paying attention the way I could have been, to then start to really listen. And then you start talking about, how that is, how you get there. And then that
all the work that leads to the lavish.
Right. Right.
The lights and the sounds.
Do pictures, graphics, and slides saying, a player loses this amount of money. We know players gamble at casinos. They lose this money. That equals, this kind of statistics and math. And then that's what equals a front row seat at the big fight. It really kind of break it down like that. And then you really get behind, the math and what the theoretical is. And I think that's just a great place to start to really help kids visualize what it, how money turns into the perks and what we use, the word we use, comp, out here,
Right.
I didn't understand any of that back then.
Oh, very good. Well, like I said, doing a great job. Have enjoyed listening to the show and getting to know more about you, and enjoy working with you as well from the affiliate side.
I appreciate that. All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Good night, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good night. Yeah, Steve's a great guy. I really like him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Fun to work with.
There we go. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jess Martinelli? Hello? Can you hear us? Hello, hello? I guess they can't hear us.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get right back to you. If you can hear us, we'll get right back to you. All right. Hang on one sec. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jess Martinelli?
Yes. Good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Excellent. I've really, really enjoyed listening to how you got where you are. And there's a few things you said that I have my deepest respect that you've committed. One, anybody that's put as much into hockey as you have has a different understanding of life and commitment.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
And yeah, and I mean, it isn't like some kid who's playing basketball, or I was in a rock band in high school and stuff. Hockey, the commitment is so amazing to me. And then I have many, many close friends who went to state, and I've always been in awe of their comfort in dealing with situations and not getting, what would I say, over exhausted or overstimulated in trying to resolve something. It sounds like you got a lot of that from getting into doing food service early. Did you find that you learned a lot then? And did your hockey and being in a team help you desire to do that in food service?
Yeah, actually, I really appreciate your kind words. And I know hockey was a huge commitment, and, you know, from 6 years old all the way up till 18. I mean, it really did. It takes a lot. I missed countless vacations with groups of friends. I missed after school activities outside of hockey and because of it, and had to drive 25 minutes to my rink every single day. And you really do form this unbreakable bond with your teammates, and because they're all in the same boat. They're all missing other things just for this one goal, this one passion. It was a big commitment my whole life. And I remember my dad saying all the time that exact thing. This is a commitment. We've made this commitment. And you know, that taught me to honor commitments and how important loyalty is. And you don't give up, because at the end of the day, you love something. And I really do love hockey. I respect hockey players because it's the fastest sport in the world. You know, aside from NASCAR, literally, it's you know, you're on two tiny pieces of metal and you're out there, you know, just going so fast. Your brain, I think my brain developed in a way that because of hockey, I'm able to make very quick decisions in my head without saying anything out loud. I just, you know, you have to, otherwise you could end up actually physically hurt, or you miss that opportunity where your teammates open across the ice and nobody else sees that. You know, your brain develops a way to make those decisions and see things that other people outside of that world don't, and so quickly. And to your question about food and beverage, you know, I loved hockey is chaos all the time, and there is a romantic chaos in the kitchen as well. You know, things are hot, you're going to get hurt. Things are sharp, you're going to get hurt. There's communication in there, and you have to act quickly. There's people waiting on you. There's people counting on you. And yeah, those you know, two experiences throughout my whole life, food and beverage and hockey, they definitely add to my ability to be in you know, metaphorical war zone situations in the workplace, where I just, you know, I know how to listen to everything and observe everything that's going on in a kind of slow-mo visualization and act quickly and make those decisions quickly or internalize it quickly. And I can be a nervous guy, but also all this adrenaline I've had from those experiences, I've kind of learned how to shape it and utilize it. So absolutely. Huge impact.
I think what you just said about scoring that one goal or getting that one point in hockey, it's harder than almost any other sport I can think of. And
mm-hmm.
the commitment it takes. And I always respect any young person when they have a bit of naive enthusiasm.
Hmm.
And if they can keep going when they have it, because what you don't know, you don't know, but if you get up and keep going, you're going to do, I mean, it's going to work. You have a commitment and a focus that, hey, they're blessed to have you where you're working, and your future and their future is awesome. So,
yeah, no, and I'll tell you, it kind of goes with how I ended up in casinos, how I wanted to do the thing that no one else was doing. It was the same, the highest level of hockey I played was varsity in high school. It was the same situation. I was the guy who stood in front of the net as a forward trying to score. And would have the defensemen and the other forwards out there shoot the puck full speed, slap shots, wrist shots, whatever, full speed. And then I was the guy who takes the beating from the defenseman, from the goalie, at the same time getting full speed pucks coming right at you, because I loved this role that nobody else wanted to take. And, all I had to do was just kind of nick the puck with the edge of my stick, and it would redirect it in this way that nobody saw coming, and that's how you tip a goal in hockey. And nobody else wanted to, have the goalie stick in the back of your legs whacking you the whole time while trying to focus on a puck that's coming 80 miles an hour at your chest that you got to move out of the way and tip at the last second. And I loved that. I loved that role. And that's why they called me the trash man. And they call those guys the garbage man. That's a very common nickname on the hockey team.
Yeah, Celeste Vito.
Garbage goal.
That's great. Well,
Celeste Vito, always in the slot.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you. Have a good night. Yeah, I love hockey. I'm Canadian, so I grew up on this stuff. Really love it.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really good. Hello, this is Tino Magnani. Do you have a question for Jess Martinelli?
Tino, good evening. Mike Savino from New York.
How are you, Mike?
Very well. I'm watching my Jets just tanking it. So,
oh, good.
You guys are a great distraction. Jess, how are you doing tonight?
Very good. Very good, Mike. Thank you.
Good. Good. First of all, sorry about your Spartans on Saturday.
It happens.
Yes, it does.
As a Spartan, I'm used to it.
Yeah, you touched on a few different aspects of the hospitality, the F&B, the hosting, the back-of-house stuff like the direct mail, being on the floor, the slot tour. I'm just curious, what have you found most rewarding from a hospitality standpoint? Which of those roles?
My current role has by far been the most rewarding, as in affiliate marketing, by leaps and bounds. But it's the same thing. It applies to affiliate marketing as well, because we do these VIP group trips, where we bring a group of players out from a different casino to the D for a weekend, and we get to tailor the whole weekend to them. And it applied with my time in special events, because I work slot tournaments, but I also was briefly during my rotation, very briefly due to a personnel change. I was the manager of special events for about 2 weeks because I was rotating. I'd only been at the company for 3 months, and I was rotating through, and the current manager left the company, and I was the only person to fill the role. And you know, there was a party that needed to be planned. And I, you know, was scrambling, the paper flying all over the office, somebody else's office. I'm trying to scramble for notes and look how to do this, teach myself within a couple of days on how to plan an event. And that was my first experience with planning an event. And that goes into part of my job right now, which is, you know, entertaining guests out here with those similar kind of VIP events. And I'm very, very, you know, attentive to detail when it comes to these things. And I found that these events give me the ability to go to each department head with a list of what I need from that person, a description of what my goal is for the weekend, a description of what the players will experience, and pretty much overload them with paperwork. And just kind of annoy them till they're like, okay, I got it. And you know, these VIP weekends have really, really paid off, and, you know, financially, but really more, they've just paid off to me personally, because it's something that, you know, it's a creative thing. It started from just one Word document where I'm typing out notes because I got a million things on my mind. And then it forms into a real itinerary, and then it forms into real work orders, and then it forms into this and that. And then at the end of the weekend, you get all this feedback from the guests saying everything was seamless. And, we couldn't believe how much attention you guys gave us, and your staff was unbelievable. We really did feel like we were the only guests in the casino. And that, you know, hearing that, it gives you self-confidence. And the next time you go to do one of these things, you have that under your belt, that self-confidence, which is everything. You're able to get more creative and take a little more risk and see things that you didn't see before because you were worried about this little, you know, check-in process or something like that. But you start to – it's a positive cycle where you get this feedback from your guests about this thing that you said was going to be all about them, and then that's exactly what they say back to you, and that's a great feeling.
Yeah, I'm also, full disclosure, I'm a hockey guy. I played and actually coached my son's team. I used to teach him. I played defense. I used to teach him how to keep guys like you out of the crease. It involved a lot of sticks to knees, to the ankles, and the back of the knees.
It's a fine line.
Let's say for a second that some moratorium came down and you weren't allowed to work in the casinos anymore. Working for VIP, working for the Detroit Red Wings, would that work for you?
Yeah, I think it might. I'd only take an offer from Steve Yzerman now that he's back there, though. It's petty, I know, but that's who I am.
That's hockey town. That's hockey town.
That's right.
I got a little anecdote for you guys. Gordie Howe, who was considered the gentleman hockey player, you know, Gordie Howe was Wayne Gretzky's idol, and Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky, they played against each other for a few games, and Gretzky then wrote later that he was the dirtiest player that he had ever met. But he did it in the corners when everybody was piled in. And he'd like, you know, he'd poke check the end of the stick into your ribs. And he said he knew exactly where to get you. Totally shattered my image of Gordie Howe. Totally shattered my image of him.
the movie Slapshot, when they're talking about, you know, Eddie Shore, old-time hockey. Gordie Howe was old-time hockey. You watch some of the YouTube videos. And you just read it. He was a tough SOB. He took nonsense from nobody.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But that's the way the game was, and it just touched on a little before. You have to learn to adjust and adapt to the situation at hand, whether you're on the ice or whether you're in the boardroom. You know, a lot of this stuff, you know, we don't know what's going to happen going in, and it's sometimes more about what do you do when. This, you know what, hits the fan, because things do change. It's unpredictable, which I think makes all three of us and everybody else, it makes it more exciting. I think you'd agree with that.
Makes you stronger.
Right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Makes you stronger.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank
Always
you.
Enjoy listening, Tito. Good night.
Have a good night. Yeah. Great questions. We have time for one more. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Jeff Martinelli?
Hi, this is Vince Manfredi. I have a couple questions, actually.
Cool.
Let me start with my joke. Jess, I've enjoyed listening to you talk. It takes me back to me starting in the industry when I finished college, which was too many years ago to count. I think the biggest difference is back then they didn't ask me if I graduated high school. So it's nice to see that the industry is maturing and becoming more technical, and I think that's really cool. A question just about moving to Vegas. I mean, it sounds like it was a bit of an insulated move for you because you had an executive, you know, junior executive job lined up, et cetera. Was there anything culturally about the community that was a surprise to you, especially maybe coming from the Midwest? Were there any significant shocks or anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I won't lie, you know, in college, I'd partied till the sun come up before. A lot of us had, you know. So to do that here and just have a place where they're serving you drinks instead of, you know, drinking at a buddy's house or a buddy's apartment until the sun comes up, that's, you know, I conceptualized that. And that part wasn't a shock to me. You know, I will say, though, people in Vegas definitely have a very high tolerance for alcohol. And that's part of the job too. It really can be. I've personally have taken a step back from that and like to take breaks from drinking at all, even a glass of wine, just because it is a intense industry for young people too. You work very hard and then you want to go out at night too. But, it's about balance, and that wasn't overwhelming to me at all. I think what was overwhelming in the beginning was having the access to gambling, because we had casinos in Detroit, and we had Caesars Wynn right across the river. But I, you know, after turning 21, I really never frequented the casinos. I think I'd been to a casino in Michigan, I think less than five times before I physically moved to Vegas. So
interesting. So that's a whole new world for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something you can, you know, a lot of people will gamble on their own too. You don't have to be out with a group of friends. Oh, we're all going to the casino. So, you know, I started out gambling and I started out winning. I wasn't betting much. I wasn't greedy. $5 to me is still a lot of money. It was a lot of money to me back then, you know, and it just is. But, you know, my problem was that the first month that I was here, I had won like, you know, $200, and I was like, wow, this is easy. And it was really just that small money. And I was like, you know, that's the worst thing you could do. I say this to people all the time. This is the worst thing you can do is come to Vegas on your first night, if you're on vacation, or your first night moving here, and win, because then you think, oh, it's easy. But you know, that's what happened to me. And after the month, I was like, wow. So, you know, that's not what you do. Like, yeah,
I had the opposite experience of you. I lost a whole paycheck on a Friday night shortly after I got to Las Vegas playing blackjack with bourbon. May or may not have been involved, but you know, I was looking for quarters for a week until I got paid again. But so I learned my lesson early on. As far as the direct marketing, et cetera, like how, what's the breadth of your role? I mean, are you involved in everything from creative to segmentation? I'm just kind of curious.
So I was a marketing analyst for 3 years. Well, I guess 2.5 years at the D. I'm no longer a part of direct mail and database analytics.
Oh.
But at the time, I was involved with all of it. And it was for the D and the Golden Gate for U.S. and Canada. And I had a, pretty big role for someone with my level of experience and age, but I, you know, was confident after a year of doing it. I had a great trainer and great support staff, but there were really only three or four of us when I started out doing database analytics stuff. And that experience was huge for me. I got, you know, 12 different departments in my management program. I rotated through. And then there's marketing analytics, database analytics. And you know, a kid in Vegas, probably, you know, 9 out of 10 aren't going to select the what seems like the most boring one, you know. And I had some good coaches back then who said, look, you learn about this stuff. This is the stuff at the core of what everybody cares about. If you understand an actual win and a theoretical win and how everything stems from there and how it all, you know, builds out, then, you know, you're going to be off to a running start in a couple of years. And it was absolutely true. So that's, you know, it was a lot of reason I went into database analytics and I had some experience with computer sciences in college as well.
Gotcha. It sounds like we learned some very valuable lessons. Do we have another minute or where are we, Tino?
Yeah. You got one more question. I think then we can wrap
it up. I just have
up.
One more. Just one more question for you, Jess. Do you guys get any locals at the D?
We do. But I know we call ourselves a destination property because that's what we are. We get plenty of locals. Lots of walk-in foot traffic. You know, you got Fremont Street. It's easy to bring people in. But while we focus on locals and divert plenty of attention to locals, a lot of our operations and a lot of our work is for destination market.
I would think that the Golden Gate, which you guys did an incredible job of revamping, I think it looks spectacular in there. And I was mid-morning and it was just cranking. I was thrilled to see that downtown. But I just wondering if you treat them differently in any way when it comes to the way that you create offers and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You mean the D and the Golden, like separate?
No, I mean
just company?
Like for your direct mail. I know you don't do it directly anymore, but the direct mail. Do you handle a local player differently when it comes to the reinvestment? I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. You know, rooms. The whole rooming component is completely different situation. A lot. You know, good, very good locals. They get a room, but. A lot of the lower end tiers, they don't because they're within driving distance. And that's, you know, something that we use our database analytics for when we pull our data lists is, you know, the classic local zip code thing. And it's they're very different, very, very different offers. And that's from everything from rooms to food to show tickets and, you know, so.
I think the PD component that you mentioned, you wish you knew more about. I think that's also really at the core of, you know, building high value customers, and that's critical in our business, especially right now. But anyway, I know we're out of time. But Jess, it was a pleasure to talk to you, and I wish you much success, continued success as you progress. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks,
take care.
Vince. Thanks for being a big supporter of the show. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Yep. Bye bye. Jess, it's been fantastic. You were absolutely great on the show. And I've been getting a lot of texts and feedback. People really enjoy what you were saying. And I'm looking forward to having you back on the show, buddy.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you're going to pop in the G2E, I'm doing a video clip series of people giving 1 to 2 minute comments.
Okay.
I'll send you an invite. And if you can make it, I'd love to get a 1 or 2 minute video comment that we're going to use on across all our networks.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely try and work you guys in. Absolutely.
Okay. You got it. I'm going to send you an invite. And like I said, thanks for taking the time to be on the show and really appreciate everything you said.
Cool. Thank you, Tino. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good night. What a great show. Jess is younger, up and coming, and he's got, you know, a lot of hard work and dedication behind him, and great guy. Thursday, Judy Wright, she is an amazing HR person, and she also is the president of the Native American HR Association, and she's got a lot of good, great things to say. She works at Verona, great casino, and remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon. Ciao.